think we proceed in line of what we had agreed. I'm going to take another second round, follow up and more questions from members and input. Honourable McKenzie, Honourable Sotetsu, Honourable Shweda, Honourable Shin, Honourable Kidia, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Mr. Minister. It's always a pleasure to engage with you because you're a very engaging man. So there's a bit of a compliment. You come to the committee more often. Minister, in terms of...
You must come to the committee more often. You are an engaging person, so it's good to have you here.
Well, there's a hope for you there too, aren't you, Minister? In fact, there's a leadership vacancy at the moment. Perhaps if you hurry, you could put your name forward. sorry, can I withdraw that for the purposes of the committee? just in terms of incentives, Minister, I wasn't specifically referring to cash incentives, although I can see where the misunderstanding would arise. The incentive that I'm talking about here is the spectrum. And we heard that from the private companies that have presented it, certainly in the last year, and I'll quote, spectrum, spectrum, spectrum. So that's a tremendous amount of leverage for the department to use to encourage and incentivize mobile companies to roll out broadband and services into areas that are underserviced because they are hungry for that spectrum. So I would like to know your thoughts on that. And you mentioned policy, perhaps, indeed, and then you referred to the officials in your department who tended to be a little bit more conservative. Perhaps, you know, a little bit of a push for that policy would be a very good idea. Just in terms of national coverage, I've driven my car down from Johannesburg to Cape Town twice. And the coverage is excellent. I haven't dropped a single call on the way down. It's a lovely opportunity to talk to friends and colleagues, lots of time. And not once have I ever lost a call. I've been on phone for 6 minutes to one person. Never dropped a call. Crystal clear reception. So, you know, it's out there. That coverage is out there. And again, it's just a matter of using that incentive. So perhaps, and I know it's now out of your hands. It's in the hands of the Department of Communications. But perhaps we could put pressure on him to get their job done so that we can actually facilitate the rollout of broadband in this country. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable McKenzie, me and you have different experiences and come from the same province. No, it's on the hands-free. It's on the hands-free, not on my ear. I can't do that.
I think this has partly touched on my question. That did you refer to some engagement with SOCs with the intention of increasing coordination and reducing duplication? Since ICT cuts across all departments, our request led by HS Communications, have we had a similar engagement with other departments to enhance coordination and manage the duplication? And on ICT policy review, we acknowledge the fact that the department was aware that we can't just move straight to 2030 vision, but there's a strict focus on the next 5 years. Within the targeted 5 years, are there anticipated objectives which might pose or temper with the time frame, maybe put some hindrance? And the other one, on set-top office subsidies and installation, we always talk about the localization of manufacturing and installation, of course, but we do not have an idea as to what percentage will be set aside for women and people living with disabilities. And the good thing about the project is that it has an element of job creation, but little is said about the ownership of the manufacturing industry. Most of them are being owned by the previously advantaged, in as far as this project is concerned, I'm going to be provided with an audit in as far as ownership is concerned. The project can be the previously disadvantaged accommodated. Thank you.
Thank you,
Chairperson. Minister, you reflected on the possible duplication of schools. You find that one entity or two more connect the same schools, which causes a problem at times. And of course, this is due to the NIM from a school where that exactly happened. But then the problem is after the connection, what happens? Who's responsible for paying of these fees or servicing the connectivity to the schools? Because many times they do that and disappear. And when you have got technical problems, you will call the call centers and nobody will respond to that. And secondly, you also indicated in your 2014 budget speech talking about the challenges, particularly the implication of the infrastructure as well, which eventually lead to high costs. And you said at the time that you would probably direct ICASA to formulate the regulations that will prevent such occurrences. I just want to find out whether or not you have done that so far, and how far is the process? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Because I'll just ask this question from the presentation, and which is also then referred to in the strategic plan, is the establishment of a wholesale open access network, inclusive of ICT data companies. Now, I want to actually understand how you intend to incorporate the private sector in it. Is this going to be a public participation network? How is it going to be managed? Who's going to run it? And some details on that, please. And then also here, you've got reviewing of the national radio frequency spectrum policy. Can you tell us when this policy directive is actually going to be issued? Because, you know, we've had the first ICASA plan on spectrum allocation, on high demand spectrum allocation, been sitting around since 2011. I believe it's been redone. Can you tell us when you're going to actually issue that? Because it, you know, as I say, this is one of the most critical factors, implementing the fact that the fact that our country is not, we're losing ground in international ratings because we're actually not rolling out the network. Then, on the strategic plan, that's the other one. It's the annual performance plan. On page 11, can you please explain to me what a KIM strategy is? I've got no idea what that is. But it's one of your major opportunities there. You say digital broadcasting migrations is on page 9. Department will support the Department of Communications to ensure that South Africa meets the international telecommunications deadline of June 2015. Can you please explain to me what you mean by to ensure that we meet the international deadline? Are you saying it's when we flick a switch, or that the Northern Cape gets its digital boxes? I know that the switchover is going to happen. But I mean, what are the criteria you're using? Let me put it this way. What criteria are you using to say we have met the deadline? Okay, utility position papers here, 5 ICT position papers. The cost of decreasing the cost of communication you've talked about. Developing a local loop strategy. Can you have some idea when that will come out? Network pricing transparency. And the standard agreements between operators to share each other's networks. Can you please have some idea on when that will come out? As I said, I'm going to find out what a team strategy is. On your international target, page 18 of the annual performance plan. You said that the department contributes to its position on spectrum management in Africa. What was that position? Is it going to be any different to how South Africa allocates its spectrum? Then on cyber security, it's not really given much weight on page 16 of the strategic plan, but it is on the presentation. What legislation are we expecting on that front, either from this department or any allied department? And what do you mean by established cyber security institutional capacity? That's page 18. Because there is already a security council, IT Security Council, which was established in, I think it was November, December 2015. What happened to that? Does it still exist? And Minister, you were involved last year in forming other groupings, I think it was in terms of the IT Cyber Security Framework. If you can explain to us what actually is happening. We know there's a lot of information here about the Cyber Security Hub. I'm not talking about the hub. I'm talking about what institutional arrangements are happening for cyber security and what the pending legislation we can expect. I mentioned that there. Also, what is happening to coordinate the efforts for an intergovernmental department e-government strategy? Who is actually driving this? Is it CETA? Is it Public Service and Administration? What is this IGR forum? That's on page 27. Institutionalization of the IGR forum to foster buy-in from the three spheres of government. Please can you explain what that is and heads it at the moment? I believe there is a group of IT managers in government. Would like to know who they are. Right, and one of the risks that you've mentioned on page 27 is the low uptake and usage of ICTs by government, business and individuals. And you've talked there about developing a project implementation plan and the project management office and the appointment of a transaction advisor. What is this? So obviously, the rollout of e-government to the nation, to citizens of the nation, is critical to go to empower them. And so I'd like to have some detail on what do you mean by that? You talk about implementation of a national e-strategy, and you know, sure, we 15 years down the line of talking about integrated ICTs, and we still don't have that. Establishment of the network. I think that's basically it. Thank you.
And over to you. Chairperson, thank you. I believe that we can now just move a little broader with regards to questions on the actual allocation, financial allocation. And I just wanted to focus first of all on the provision in the budget for international relations. Can we have some clarity on if we look at the history of membership fees, etc., there was under budgeted in the past. There was a trend of not budgeting adequate funding, and therefore savings, environments, etc., moves, shifts from other departments, from other programs or branches had to fund that. Are we not going to see exactly a repeat of that in this financial year? And secondly, could we get a better idea of the acute role, because if you look at it is a small percentage of the budget that is allocated to international, but just to make sure that we actually get value for money, be it as small as it is, at only 3% of budget, clearly there needs to be a tightening of what the mandate is that the department is taking from government to negotiate and feedback. And we do understand, the previous presentation, we do understand that it is an environment where things happen very fast and they have to actually move with trends, international trends, etc. But do you really get value bringing back some international resolutions, tracking our progress on achieving specific deadlines, etc. So, just as far as that is concerned. Then, secondly, obviously always when you look at budget allocations, etc., it is not necessarily putting more money into a specific field that makes the difference. It also depends on effective management. But I believe that I would like to have the assurance that if we look at the department and its critical role in this sector, and that it's really going to be government agency, are we budgeting enough for research? And that is program 3, policy, research, and capacity development. Again, it's only 7% of budget that goes in that specific field. And if we think about the industry being an industry where things change so rapidly and new technologies develop and new technologies that can actually facilitate better access, etc., is that adequate? I understood what the minister said earlier, the specialists that we need to bring in, and that would help. But if we continue to work as we did in the past, I believe we will continue to fall short of international development. And therefore, either we need to adjust the work in the department, or we need to make sure that we develop the necessary capacity in the department without going to consultants to help us study international trends, etc., and opportunities. Chairperson, then just one other matter that I wanted to understand better. Look at the strategic alignment, slide 19. And specifically the reference to extending broadband penetration as part of the first phase or in the rapid rollout to be covered nationally in 2019. If we talk about 1,296 identified government institutions, does that exclude schools or does that include schools? The reason that I'm asking that is I get a distinct sense that we have not been monitoring, as the minister also said earlier, we have not really monitored what has been covered with the rollout, what is still functional, and where some of the equipment might have become dysfunctional or outdated. And I'm concerned that if we just talk about numbers without really talking about, as he indicated, the standard of what we mean when we say that, and the benefits, we have to get some or other interaction between the Department of Basic Education and the department. We must also encourage the further rollout through evidence-based progress that the specific school is making, so that we can really encourage the uptake and the efforts and involve more in the private sector to assist government in this regard. Now, if we look at the numbers there, is it what percentage of that would be individual schools and which of those would be other institutions, be it clinics, hospitals, or whatever they are? As far as rapid deployment policy is concerned, this is a matter that has been a concern for quite some time. We often see some other consortium rolling out the network to specific areas. When you travel on high roads, which I'm quite fond of, then you see that. But then you also see that when you get to little towns, etc., then obviously there are problems because they must now first get permission from this department and then from the roads department and then from that one and that one and ultimately from the mayor's office, etc. So I suppose this is what it is about. But would it need, going forward, possible legal intervention? I can recall that at one stage we had to pass the Development Facilitation Act because of blockages. And Vanessa referred to it a little while earlier, that public sector and public institutions tend to look for reasons why things can't happen. And I'm not generalizing, but I'm saying I understand that some bureaucracies are not always moving the extra mile to facilitate this. Will the department also consider engaging with other departments to make sure that we get everybody on board, including, if necessary, if we talk about the infrastructure rollout, it may require legislative intervention. Thank you, Chairperson.
Another question, we've got something.
Thank you. This bears on the outsourced money on page 6 of the annual performance plan. There's a dramatic increase in outsourced services, and I would obviously like some explanation on this. This is page 6 of the AP, where, I mean, last year the department spent $52.5 million on agency support and outsourced services. This year it plans to spend $230 million. Next year, $268 million, and then after that, $272 million. So for the next 3 years, we've had a dramatic increase in your estimates of expenditure on outsourced services. Can you please explain what those are and why has she spent so much money? Thank you.
Well, thank you for the question. Sometimes I can pick up where the outsourced funds was, but it's like I did find. I think for me, following what has been raised earlier on, and I was excited, Minister, when you started talking about the issue of that DTI is looking at the issue of manufacturing in the country. Because it does not make sense in the manner that the country operates, especially in the ICT. It doesn't. It's not to the benefit of all of us. It's not to the benefit of government. It's not to the benefit of consumers. And I mentioned this example. You'd note sometimes, some years back, South Africa was the biggest consumer or users of blackberries. Nowhere in the world did we have those number of blackberries except here. But we did not even have a single plant of producing blackberries. Were imported into the country. And just to go from, if you look at what Brazil has done, Brazil has gone and did a study and then they went and implemented a tax increase. They did a 40% tax increase in terms of importing of electronics. Immediately they did that, all the people who are manufacturers went to Brazil and established manufacturing plants. You call your Apple, your Samsung, Glover. And that contributed to job creation, it contributed to local content and all those things, because it doesn't make sense. You look at the market of Africa, the fact that Apple 6 and Samsung 6 are launched at the same time tells you the type of market we have in South Africa, if you do an analysis. So the fact that none of these companies would want to miss out, they would compete, most of them are launching products at the same time, tells you the type of a market that we have. And I think as South Africa and from government point of view, we've not utilized or we've not taken opportunity for that, because it will definitely help us in developing the economy and growing our economy, and that could be our contribution for economic development. So I'm really happy, and I think Honourable Singh spoke about the broader view of economic development, and I know Minister, you already talk about ICT as a contributing factor in ensuring that there's economic development. And we've got to start looking at those things. What are the enablers? What are the things that we need to do to assist or to contribute in growing the economy, to contribute in creating jobs? So we've got to do that. We've got to be able to see that production and those things that we are able to talk to. And the other thing that I want to speak to, link to that, is it's our delay in how we process policy and how we make policy pronouncements, because that has an impact on the economic development side. One of the issues, Minister, is the issue of EEE advisory panel, which has delayed. I've picked the fifth leg on Ghana, but if you are to look at the last strategic plan, the target was last year, November. The department has put it. And now we are moving it again this year. So that as well contributes. Because these are enablers that assist in the development of the economy. You look again the issue of spectrum. If you are to go back in terms of budget or strategic plan 2011-2012, which means most of the officials who are here from the department were in the Department of Communication. In that strategic plan, the target was for a policy of spectrum minister. 2 years, 3 years, 2011-2012, we are 2015 now. Nothing. We are still pending. So, that's the impact we have. So, we've got to be able to decide on policy and do things right so that we can enable the environment for economic development. So it's very important. But another thing that I want to speak to, and I noted the comments around the issue of broadband rollout. What I'm seeking is that all entities have responsibility and have a role, because the mandate, for example, ISASA. When you look at the mandate of ISASA in terms of ECA, there's a role to play in rolling out broadband and accessing. So I agree with the fact that it's not Telecom alone, it's not Telecom that is going to do this thing. We have agencies, we have entities that are government entities that are going to drive this. And that's why Telecom can be the lead, but it has to be within the context that they work with everybody. Because otherwise now we sort of indirectly give entities without saying it. So when it becomes a lead, there's PI, there's USAFA, there's your sector which has a responsibility on e-governance and SA Connect. Now, coming back to the issue that I raised earlier on the implementation of ECA, I think one of the things that we are going to have to do, even prior, no minister, the issue of legislation is not yet coming through to us now. But I think one of the things that we are going to have to do is to do an audit on what was supposed to be done based on the law that has not been done, and get an explanation properly why have you abandoned those things. The issue of emergency call center that is in the legislation is a mandate for the department to deliver and is currently not on the APP. The issue of ICT museum that is in the legislation as a mandate for the department to deliver that is currently not on the APP. Because for us, that's what we utilize to monitor the impact and the work that the department does. So we've got to be able to see what is written in the legislation translated into the annual performance plans. So that when we do assessment as to where are these things that started here, to say we need to find expression into your plans. Otherwise they remain things that are written in the legislation with no funding and not going to be implemented. And I think we are going to have to come back maybe when we deal with Minister, when we deal with the issue of rollout of broadband, the policy and all that. And I'm hoping by that time the issue of schools connectivity would have been clarified. Because if you are to look at the department's plan, they are planning 1,296 schools to be connected. Who's connecting the schools? Is it the department? Which I think the department doesn't have a mandate. But if it's going to be USASA, it's going to be CETA, it's going to be Telecom, it's going to be operators, then I know. Because if the department is to account on school connectivity, it has to take into consideration everybody's role in connecting a school. and reflect it so that we are able to hold them accountable. I'm noting that operators have 5 years to connect a particular number, and I'm happy, Mr. Director, that you are looking at the process, because I just don't understand where are we supposed to connect those schools, who else is going to connect the other schools. Because the issue, even last time when we had a joint meeting with basic education, we said we wanted to know, I think currently, if I'm not mistaken, the schools are 332,000 in the country. And we wanted to understand how many schools have been allocated either as an operator or an entity to be connected. And after that, how many are left? Because it becomes a fallacy because we wouldn't know. You might say that you are connected by 10 years or 2030. There might be schools that are still being connected. Obviously, we are taking into consideration that the schools that do not have infrastructure, therefore, it might be difficult. You know, your math schools that are still being sorted out through our city in with the basic education. So that process will not wait. But it has to be within, well, this current government has a 5-year mandate. And within this 5-year mandate, what is it that we are hoping to achieve? But if we are to say that particular number of schools are going to be collected and we're leaving the others, is it not that we're creating an inequality in education for school children? What are the constitution say? Because these are huge implications to the government. Because we shouldn't create inequalities of education that a particular child has a particular opportunity, because we are not addressing the past. Because the mandate of this government as a democratic government needs to try and actually address the past, where all children have equal opportunities in accessing education with the same standard, London standards. So for me, that's what I have concerns on, especially when it comes to the issue of schools connectivity. And I know we are going to do some colleagues wanting to the issues that just digital migration and the role of, which I think so far deals with what USASA has to do, and we are interacting with USASA this afternoon. I would want us to get also the DSU to leave that part for afternoon so that we can get more engagement in terms of the what they have done, give us a feedback, the localization issues, the issues of ownership, so that we can deal with it properly when we come to that. But I think that's where I want us to live in, the issues currently. But, and another thing that maybe we need to start doing as a committee is to, as well, trace back in terms of the strategic plans. Maybe this is what we must try and include in our analysis and Ms. Lennon. The issues that have been put in a strategic plan by the following year are left out, because we need to start asking, if they are not delivered, where are they? Because if you commit for a particular year, you say this is what we are going to do, then the following year we must be able to get where it is. If it's not yet achieved, it must still be the plan. So it shouldn't be that things are left, because then it's new things every time. We get something, then it's like a password, we do it, we start making noise about it, after a year then leave it, and then something else. I think that's another thing that we must have to do. But even towards the time when we do budget review process, PRR, this is things that we must start looking at and tracing. This was there, maybe within a particular 5 years, this was that, and this needed to be done, it was left out, this is what the legislation. And where there's been time frames of that across the department and entities, I think that will assist us to be able to pick up even the trends of implementing decisions and commitments made by the creative. So those few words, I'm going to allow for responses. I don't know if Minister, you want to start, or you want to allow Alex to go.
Actually, most of the issues are now for the officials to really respond. And thanks for giving guidance on the digital matters, because I'm dealing with you, Sada, in the afternoon. We'll take that. Now, really, Ms. McKenna, I think we're aligned. The issue of we view this, the release of the spectrum out of the digital progressism, but yes, it is a priority to us. That's why we are still working with the DOC to assist whatever is necessary, because clearly we are not going to meet the June deadline. But even if we don't meet it, we hope that there will be a care program which will make us to have this program met at this program that is the air dealing with us, and you deal with it when we're dealing with you. So, but to us, the issue of spectrum release is quite critical, because there's a spectrum which has been decided a couple of years ago by the IGU that it should be released for the use. We all know what has happened, so I'm not going to go in there. So spectrum is important. It is a rare resource. But my understanding is one resource God gave us equally. We have got the same spectrum like Lesotho, like Swaziland, like US, but the key thing is how we manage the spectrum, and that's how we, that the issue of having a clear spectrum policy becomes very urgent for us. But we need that spectrum unlocked and released for development of the coast and to advance our economy. I'm happy that we want good national coverage along our highways. Correct. Even where I stay in the rural areas, we got some coverage to make calls. But for internet access, we still don't have good coverage. For basic internet, we're around 40-something%. For real broadband, we're still at 70% in terms of international standards. So we really had to improve. But we're not alone there. Even some of the big countries, they're around 30%. But they are improving. They are improving. So we have to improve. So, Tessie, I think some of your policy things are directed to officials, but I fully agree with your comments. On transforming the industry, I think that's what the center said, why have we delayed the council to guide us on that, and we're not doing those things. But the issue of localization, I think Shay also said, it is important for job creation. South Africa has three persistent problems: poverty, unemployment, and inequality. So we have to also contribute in resolving some of these persistent challenges as a result of our past. Honorable Zubera and the Chairperson has spoken to this thing of avoiding this duplication in schools, but then there are, you see, when they connect the thing, they connect for 18 months, 2 years, usually, and then what then? I think their side and the department, I hope they'll explain this, that what we'll be buying this year is not buying the infrastructure, we'll be buying the connectivity. But we don't have the connectivity in Mahlevuga, Mahlevashona. We have got constant connectivity for our people, for our children, for our schools, for our offices, for our industry. Available all the time. So that's a pen. How far, if somebody under the incarcerated is on the issue of duplication, I don't have the figures yet. Maybe the officials were asking that and I'll come in to you. But the infrastructure duplication, both the department and the council have been doing studies on the market structure, on the open access regimes and so on. For this 20 years, what is coming out even in the policy review? what comes out of the NDP itself, we must seriously consider the open access networks. That's what the NDP also says. How do we structure it? It should be detailed in the policy. Honorable Cecile asked the same question. So how are we envisaging this thing? I tend to speak as a simple person because I'm not a technical person. You see, I have said with the people from the department, I really understand now this kind of class thing. Define how the networks are, how they design. I've got some broad understanding as a rural person. But, you know, along that highway, Honorable King was traveling, you'll find that there are two or three pipes running. Some of them are running half full, others are running half empty. But they are there. It's how do we bless them, say, those who are providing this thing, they must just provide a full pipe where everyone can have access at a wholesale price, which has to be monitored and stringently monitored by the regulator. So even the this open access network, even for the poor regulator, we may run into problems. So that's why what in working with the CASA, increase their capacity. They must really have all the capacities to monitor these things. Because if I'm running a network in Cape Town, I just get to get it to the national table, I must know that I'm getting a fair price instead of me putting the same infrastructure. That's my rural understanding of this open access. It's the same thing even with the mobile. People tend to think we need to look at a fixed line and leave the mobile. But if we do that, there will never be four fixed operators. Because if we allow just pure competition on infrastructure, it's not a wise investment. If the infrastructure has got the capacity to carry all of us, we must allow competition on services so that we can drive the prices down. That's all what all of us, I think, we agree. That's just the general thinking and the principles, but from a layman point of view. We need to get these things to be concretized. You started talk about the incentives and how we incentivize the private sector can do that. We're been engaging them. Then he said, just for this detection, we do like the German model. You all heard about the German model. The Germans start in the rural area, but their rural area is not really like our rural areas. Then come to urban areas. And they're very quick to deploy the infrastructure in those neglected areas because they knew the profits are in the urban areas. So we're looking at all of models of incentivizing and putting proper arrangements so that we can direct the investment and cover South Africa as quick as possible. So also mentioned the issue of tight mandates and feedback. I'm sure the department did not get. And the question is, what are these things we are really doing in the international field? When do you report back to this committee? We attend conferences, and I know we report back now to President Zuma because he's demanding. He doesn't want ministers to go with that report. Because these are not there to travel and visit. These are working visits. So, yeah, engage on the rights on matter, as you said, we belong to international organizations. But what positions and mandates do you go to this? Do we protect the interests of our nation? I think that's what the members are asking us. Yes, we try to encourage them, but we have to improve. Do we work with Africans, promote the development of Africa as a leading hand, one of the leading hands in developing Africa.
Yes,
we work with them. But do we work with our Foreign Affairs or DECO, Department of International Relations?
Yes,
we work with them because we have to align with them when we are dealing with this thing, policy. Wherever we go, we contract with them. Do we work with them in other international organizations which are not necessarily postal or IT?
Yes.
Currently, there's a huge debate at UN about internet governance. It's a very difficult topic. The developed countries, they don't want to put this thing on the agenda. They like to keep it out as possible. But as developing countries, they've got interest in it. The ICANN debate, is it going to be industry, is it going to be government, is it going to be both which govern the internet? Those are the things where our officials are engaging deeply, and all these forums, we participate in all these forums because we want a transparent and a multilateral governance of internet. We don't want the governments to be marginalized and be something which is driven by corporates. Yes, corporates can be there, you can partner with them, and so on, but the governments must have a structure and a big way in ensuring, because it affects us. This cyber space affects all of us. I think that links also, what is the, so the question on the, is it the cybersecurity framework, what is it, and how far are we, how are we working on this as government? Yes, we have started a cluster meeting between security cluster and the cluster ICT cluster international relations and trade, which I happen to share in government, where we're trying to really pick each other and see how do we move on this. The department which is responsible to review all legislation which is leading there is the Department of Justice. The individual department will contribute so that we say this legislation in your sector, but the DC Department of Justice. The framework is there. The security department with clear mandates on what they should do. And our task as the DTS, we were supposed to finalize the policy on how to work with private sector, the simplification of it. The private sector is very keen to work with government because it affects them quite negatively. It is one thing, there's a willingness of partnership, it is the private sector. As we finalize the policy, how do we engage the private sector? How do we bring the issues which comes from the private sector to the government system, so as we improve our governance system of the cyberspace and protection of our cyberspace. So that's the task of the department. That's why they give this fancy name of called HUB. Cyber security HUB. I don't know what it means, HUB. It looks like a big thing to me, but the task we're supposed to carry, we must engage the private sector. And I know the private sector is very keen on this initiative because we must not only banks, because they have got a huge interest, the whole private sector, they have a second. We are a developing country with advanced systems and the criminals are more interested in our country than in any other country in our neighborhood. Because we have got this system for transactions, for doing business, and so on. So, our task is to work with the private sector in a simpler form. So, when we ask the department, I say, what are the problems? When are you engaging? Which of these sectors of the private sector are you going to engage? Because, to me, it's a much simpler task. So that we can have a feedback mechanism to say what more do we need to strengthen? What advice do you give to the police who are actually involved, the prosecutors who are in justice, who are actually dealing with the cases? What advice do you give to the state security agencies which are monitoring some of these things? Working with, and it should be a dialoguing and a constant feedback. We send the information side and we bring it back to our business partners or private sector. That is not just only private sector as business, but also the community at large. How do we send signals? Because it's not only the security department who say we fund this thing. How do we bring the society, our children who are surfing on this network, alerting them of the dangers which are there, but also allowing the states to participate in this information society highways, but at the same time protecting them from the, to not be vulnerable. So it should be the platform of engagement, really. That's what we are supposed to create. To me, it doesn't need a fixed office. We need a mobility. People either act. Not those who sit in the office and wait, you see. But we are still engaging with my department. I'm sure we'll finalize it. But that's what we expect. So that when we finalize the policy, we'll then say the cyber security policy for private sector, for our society, is this one. These are the tools, these are things we shouldn't do. We've agreed, we've done the consultation, we've practiced. These are things which come out of experience by our own people. I hope this half thing, we should just make it simple like that, so that we're all clear on what to be done. Second, I've noted those things about the call center. And the universal self-obligations, I'm sure the department we look into those, but I thought those were the specific things which were directed to me. I'll just cover those. If I learned anything, I'll come back as members may remind. But it's up to now all these people who are skipped to run this department who must answer the rest. Deputy Chairperson.
Honorable Chairperson, can I just want to clarify the issue that you raised earlier on when you spoke about a 1% increase to 18.3%, was it about the figure on page 6 of the structure of the EPP? Because yes, I want to deal with it, but I just wanted to confirm that on the consultants, page 6 of the annual performance plan is under infrastructure planning. The first one is contracted as agency support / outsourced services.
I raised the issue of consultants in my first round of issues. Honorable Shin asked about what are the agency and support stroke outsourced services, what is it about? That's the question.
Let me test you with the outsourced services. You recall earlier on when we spoke about the broadband implementation phase one that we are allocated 200 million. This is where the money has been allocated to. So this is the money that we'll then be using for the implementations of phase one. Ordinarily, let's assume that by the time that we are looking, let's say we had already concluded that CETA would be the one, the money would have been allocated against CETA. So, but in this instance, the money has been allocated against the department. We would then be doing the transfer into the actual entities that will be then to be doing the implementation. I don't know if it makes sense on our question. Yeah, so I think it's 200 million year one. I just don't remember the exact figures of year three and year three. But this is what then would be a total of 710 million total in terms of the next 3 years of our allocation. I'm correct. That's correct figures. There was a question around the IGR forum. What is it? Who is heading it and all of this? And IGR unit is a unit, it's a unit at the level of executive director reporting to the IFAC branch. You would note that at the department we don't have provincial competencies. Now, what supports us in terms of our work in the province is the IGR Act. And what we've done is we've established a unit at the level of a chief director with, I think, about two or three directors. These are the people who are now assisting the department in terms of the work of the department at provincial level, also at the municipal level, because of the whole issue of the lack of provincial competencies. Now, on the budgeting, whether is it enough for the research work of the department from Honorable Killian, definitely not. I think the area of research is an area that requires an overhaul. There has been an effort in terms of engaging DSG on how we can overhaul our research capability as a department. The work is underway. We did, in this financial year, in the previous financial year, try to appoint a chief director for innovation and research. Unfortunately, when we went through the process, we were of the conclusion that the people who had applied, none of them had the necessary capacity. Interestingly enough, on the panel for the shortlisting, we had invited a DDG from Science and Technology, who's responsible for that kind of work. We had the CEO, the CEO of TN, of Innovation Hub. We also had the CEO of Innovation Hub, because I think what we acknowledge as a department is not our area of expertise. We then said let's collaborate with Innovation Hub and DSG to assist us. So we still are going through that process, but at least what I think gives us a comfort is the good working relationship between us and DSG and Innovation Hub, because they were quite comfortable. It went to an extent where they even looked at the advert and said, look, this is how we think we should approach the advert in terms of the kind of person that you're looking for, and because you're talking about people who are, their lives about research. The next question was on the review of the spectrum policy. When we talk about spectrum, there are two processes, Honorable Chairperson, that we're talking about. There's the National Radio Frequency Spectrum Policy, which was finalized or approved in 2010. And then the one that Chairperson was talking about is the policy directions on high demand for spectrum. Now, we would be reviewing the National Radio Frequency Spectrum. That's the overall policy that deals with spectrum overall. Even though the discussions need to focus on high demand for spectrum, spectrum is not just about the broadband. The spectrum for emergency services, for transport, for all of it. Yes, that the discussions around those issues don't necessarily occupy the public domain, like, the one on high spectrum for high broadband. So we would then be going through that process, but post the World Radio Conference 2015. In terms of participation, what tends to happen is that when we go to the World Radio Conference, we will then go with people from the maritime sector, from the transport sector, from defense, from police, because they are the ones who are then able to lead the discussions on behalf of the country in terms of what are our transport requirements from a system point of view, or even from the emergencies point of view. There was also a question on the set-top box localization, set-aside and all of that. USASA, we know that it's under the process, and it's currently the agency. We've asked USASA to do it. Okay, we'll pack it on there because I was going to propose that. On the rollout broadband, the question that was raised by Honorable McKinsey, I think the Minister spoke to the question when he was talking about the open access, because our view is that the open access policy regime or rolling out of the infrastructure supporting the open access principle is the one that will enable the participation of the smaller players. Because if you just give spectrum to one or two or three without ensuring that when the network is rolled out with those kind of principles, you're closing out everyone. So our view is that you can't lose the space in terms of your other operators, that's the one. But also, like you're saying, I agree with you in terms of using it as an incentive to roll out broadband in the rural areas. It's a definitely good incentive, but it's how then do you caution your policy choices so that it's not just an incentive, but you don't lose out other players in the process of that. But then when we finalize the policy direction, we'll then be able to articulate how then are we dealing with all the policy principles. Honorable Chairperson, can I allow us other DDGs maybe just to come in to deal with the area of work, then I'll come back again. Which one?
Thanks, Gigi. I will deal with the local loop strategy question, which was asked by Honorable Shin. And the issue is, how are we looking into this strategy? Just to give a background, the NDP directs that we should review local loops to understand the technology impact, and from that angle, the department was therefore required to respond to the directive of the NDP. In essence, even though there was work done in 2007, it means those reports which were done at that time needs to be reviewed to see the economic benefits for either unbundling loops or even looking at new loops which may have been there in the wireless technologies, as it were. So that strategy is focusing on those elements. We are cognizant of the work that ICASA is doing in terms of the 2007 policy directive. It is our interest to do a thorough technical analysis of this area, and in this regard arrive at a development of a policy view on local loops in the country. Thank you. The policy on transparent pricing, Minister signed this to ICASA to look at. We do understand that the transparent pricing regime, especially for telecommunication companies, is a difficult market, because you are also going to look at costing for even new services, broadband services, as it were. For instance, we can see that the serious challenges around the pricing of data services as well. This is why we also have to look at give a policy directive on that. So ICASA is still looking into that to come back to the minister. Once we receive ICASA's response, we will take that policy out for consultation, public consultation, and wherein we will get the inputs of even the industry, business, and everyone else to conclude into that. So it is work that we are going to conclude in the course of this financial year. Thank you. I think the broad-based Black Economic Empowerment Council for the ICT sector, we have undergone a lengthy process there of inviting participants to constitute the council itself. It's a public process. We have received nomination. What is happening now, Minister is consulting his counterpart, the DOC, so that both constitute that and get that to cabinet. So it is a process that is actually underway at the moment. And what is it? On the ECA, I think we are going to conduct that audit specifically to analyze this. We actually do. You will recall that this House adopted a ECA amendment recently, which was signed into law in 2014. So we will conduct that audit to specifically look at the elements which are implemented there, or we may have require further attention of the minister, and we'll give that report. Thank you.
Chairperson, let me just explain why Kemba was saying that through the minister, we're consulting with the Minister of Communications. Is it because on this whole issue of the DE Council, we're not only looking at the issue of the portal sector and the telecoms, but also the broadcasting sector, because we must look at all the issues of compliance, hence the importance of us also engaging and now definitely engaging with DOC on their participation in the council. So, what happens in the meantime? The deadline for compliance was, they needed to comply from the 1st of April 2015. In terms of the compliance, there's also engagement between the Minister and the Minister of Trade and Industry, when, if I recall, the letter from the Minister of Trade and Industry and Minister
was that they would consider an extension. That I think that the memo was saying from our side we would then be considering through the minister, engaging the minister of training industry on the extension. So there is also engagement between us and DGI on the issue that you are raising, Honourable Chairperson.
First of April has passed. That's what I'm asking. Today is the 14th of April. I'm asking that the deadline for compliance was the 1st of April. What happened? I'm saying that as the department, we don't have clue what happened, whether the sector was given an extension or not. They complied. That's what I'm asking for.
Because I just need to check the date. If I recall, I think the correspondence said 1st of May, if I recall. Yeah, it was 1st of May in terms of the documentation that we have in the department.
The last time I checked, I documents that at 1st of April. Because I remember I raised it, I wrote formally into the minister. We'll come back. Okay.
No. Thank you. Just on the BE Council, you said you're also looking at the broadcasting sector.
Really?
You mentioned broadcasting, that you're looking at broadcasting there. Do you not have a mandate to do that?
I wasn't saying we're looking at the broadcasting. I say we are working with the Department of Communications because they would then come in to deal with the broadcasting sector. Because remember, as government, the way things work, you can never have the kind of capacities where everything you do it alone and your own entities. Like, for example, on issues of research, you would find that we rely on GST. Like, for example, when Minister was talking earlier, he spoke to the CSIR. The GSIR mapping that we worked on as a department was from the collaboration with CSIR, which is an agency reporting to DSG. That's the nature of how we work with government.
Okay. Any other...
Knowledge management, the key issues, and yeah, just talk about the knowledge management strategy.
Thank you, Chair. The knowledge management or knowledge and information management deals with how we manage the storage and the retrieval as well as the usage of information in the department. Because half the time in organizations you find that knowledge has fallen in people's heads and when they leave, there's no institutional memo. So the knowledge management strategy is precisely seeking to address the issue around how we manage information in the department. And I think the next issue that was raised by Honourable Sheen on the, I think it was also on the consultant, which is the 95 million. I think maybe the challenge there could be the classification, because what happens is the 95 million refers to basically all the projects in the APP. Now, the way the template has been designed by the subsidiary, we are normally required to classify it as consultants, but it does not necessarily mean that money would be used on consultancy, because some of the money you may find that is actually used just internally to do the project implementation. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I will respond to the issues on cybersecurity and also on the broadband rollout. On the cybersecurity, I'll firstly just for background, the what we call a hub, I think we were trying to avoid the entire way this cybersecurity incident response team. But basically, its function is a coordinating function between government, private sector, and the public, and call it the hub, the central point. And it's key resource information. So we need to obtain information from international partners, also locally, and also from government in terms of threats on cybersecurity, and should be able to disseminate that. So we are partnering with the CSIR as a collaboration, looking at other international models where we tend to work with research institutions, because you need to continuously research on new threats that are emerging, and be able to disseminate information on time. So that's why we have established that framework and that platform. And the other key responsibility that we are working on is about the awareness. How do we make sure that people, especially the public, become aware of what are threats, whether coming from international sources or which have been detected nationally through a collaboration with the private sector. So the way that we're working that in terms of answering the question by Honorable Sources in terms of capacity, that's how we're also complementing our capacity. But during this year as well, there will be a lot of capacity building. We are engaging with the private sector to assist us in that regard as well. And also, I think, progress through our international branch where we will be facilitating some of those. With regards to Minister, the issue of institutional issues through the justice cluster, and on broadband, because the South Africa Connect was approved, and they set out targets. If one looks at those targets, in essence, and based on the mapping exercise and analyzing the gaps, those targets are trying to ensure that as a country, we expand the rollout of high capacity networks. And in that regard, in our analysis, we identify that schools are basically available in each and every community. So if we were able to achieve a target where we expand high capacity infrastructure to connect schools, more than 8% of the facilities are schools that need to be connected. So the program that we are monitoring in terms of that broadband rollout, it's expansion of the high capacity infrastructure, including connectivity to schools. However, we are aware that we are also coordinating the current connectivity that's happening to schools either through various means, but those will not be able to achieve the targets which are set out in the policy. And those targets, in terms of the high capacity speed, it's the vision that the country has that eventually at some point we should be able to use ICT as a primary means of offering, in particular, education and e-health. So there is a need that we have to expand that that high capacity links. So the numbers that are indicated in the APP is based on the reduced funding that the Treasury has given. However, there is a plan, there is work that needs to be undertaken to cover the shortfall and also look at the entire country in terms of how do we expand those high capacity networks to reach everyone. Thank you.
Perhaps to Honourable Chair, perhaps to expand on or to address Honourable Shin's question, specifically on the RSA position for Spectrum. To just indicate that we've been the previous chair for WRC at a regional level, and we are also part of the group for the African Spectrum Working Group. What we basically try to do is obviously consolidate firstly our national position and then looking at regional harmonization and then coordination at a continental level. There have been, as you alluded, key areas obviously linked to security, which is basically your public platforms, emergency platforms. We've also been looking at the issues with regards to the unarmed aircraft, and more especially for South Africa, our issue was to take forward the global side tracking, as you are aware, disappearance of the Air Malaysia. So based on that, we just felt to South Africa that it's very important to have look at and reviewing the spectrum policy at a global level. And these are the positions that we'll be taking to WRC. In terms of, just to address some of the successes, the thing obviously for us is to contribute to the economic gains of the country. And I think for them, we've been looking at, we've partnered with SABS with regards to it being a regional testing lab at a regional level. It was mainly for the DPP set-top box, but I think we need to look at it in terms of the electronic manufacturing of any devices that we would like to manufacture within the region. And this will also then boost localization as well as local manufacturing of equipment. And then we've been looking at skill training with MISA as well as eSkills Institute. And we have positioned them, so there's been interest from neighboring countries to come and basically train in South Africa. And then with regards to, we've also partnered with the EU in terms of capacity building. And I think they've assisted with broadband, the planning, as well as the strategy for the country. We've also had positions in private sector companies, also inclusive of Stantec as well, in terms of providing capacity at a regional level, in terms of broadcasting as well as content. Some of these programs we've had to obviously then transfer back or transfer to the DOC, but we are working with them because obviously as a country we still need to maintain the proposal of the House Data Score at both regional and international platforms.
I just wanted to amplify a little bit the DG's response in respect of the question from Honorable Gillian around research and whether the department actually has got enough budget to drive the ICT research agenda in the department. And the answer DG has said, Honorable Gillian, is that no. In fact, we do. We have just a shade under 3 million rand allocated, budgeted for in the 2015-16 financial year for issues related to research. And for us, it's important that the research that we undertake, one, it's not, we're not doing research for the sake of the research, but that it enhances or promotes evidence-based policy making, that we support the policy at the strategy development branch when it develops policies and so on, and that the research that undertaken actually leads to appropriate or social appropriation of ICT for effective use. So in that regard, I think there's three main things that we need to do, because we also don't have capacity in the unit called the Research and Innovation. There's just one person there at the level of director and no other warm bodies there. So one, we need to grow the capacity organically, internally, but we must also make sure that we leverage the resources of other entities, our government departments, we collaborate with them, we form strategic partnerships with them to drive the ICT research agenda on behalf of the department and so on. So in that regard, there's three things that we do. One is that we aim to establish a research expert reference group to be chaired at the level of the minister and so on, to bring in experts that are dealing with issues around ICT research to assist us, to have that skill transfer, to build that capacity internally. Two, that we will be concluding an MOU with the Department of Science and Technology, because we want to be able to tap into the formal RDI systems, the hands councils. There's a lot of work that has been done, a lot of capacity and so on, to as part and parcel of interacting with this area of work. So as the DG has said, we'll be concluding that MOU with Science and Technology, and we'll be able to drive the ICT research agenda in that regard. In terms of the national e-strategy, I think Honorable Shins asked, where does this sit and whose mandate it is to drive e-government and so on. From a legislative point of view, the Public Service Act and associated regulations actually mandate the DPSA insofar as e-government is concerned. But you also have the ECTA, the Electronic Communication and Transmission Act, that stipulates that the Minister of Telecommunications and Postal Services must develop a national e-strategy, of which a component of that national e-strategy is now the e-government part of it. And if you recall that we did have, but at the time we thought would be the implementation of that, which is in the ECA, by having the ICT plan that was approved by Cabinet in March 2007. However, the NDP says that we must, as a department, develop that overarching, integrated and comprehensive national EU strategy, and that must be driven by the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services. So in that regard, we are working very closely with the Department of Public Service and Administration in particular, because they are responsible for setting the standards and the regulations on, for example, interoperability and other aspects around e-government. So we'll be working with them very closely, and in fact, we notified the town meeting with them to try to work out this national strategy, and that will also be the work that we do with DPSA will also feed into the interdepartmental working group that we have officially established through right to the DGs from our DGs side. So we are working very closely with them, because from a legislative point of view, we both departments actually are mandated to drive elements of the government. Thank you very much.
To go back to the issue of, yeah, I've gone to my letters to the department, which have not even received an acknowledgement nor a response on this matter. The deadline is this month. April, it's not May. But the issue is that it needs to be asserted. So my question is still relevant to ask. In the meantime, why does it come? Because these are the sectors that need to comply with the legislation. Today is the 14th. What is has been communicated to the sector? What is the plan now? Yes, GTPS, let's talk about the sector. But also the GTPS. When the different course is from last year, I wrote the letter around November. At the time, it was that the anticipation that compliance and the advisory council are supposed to be in November. Now, the issue is that since then, until now, any communication to the sector, what are the plans? Because honestly, the explanation to say we are still engaging, where I'm sitting, does not hold water. And if you're expecting the sector to comply, are we expecting, that's what, maybe that means, are we expecting the sector to comply by end of this month or not?
Chairperson, we are expecting the sector to comply, but by end of the month we may have technicalities. I think that's why, for me, the alignment with GTIL, that's where the consultation was, that before we can announce anything, that consultation between the Minister of Telecoms and DGI, so that we don't announce something that we have to retract. I think that was the technicality in terms of clearing that. We do acknowledge that we had intended to finalize the council, but we then suffered with regard to the nomination, that we didn't have sufficient people nominated for the council. But I think my understanding is our engagement with GTIL would be about extension, and I think once those discussions are cleared, we'll then be able to communicate to the sector.
You're going to engage.
Yes.
It's not that you're engaged now.
I'm talking about the sector on this, but unless it's something you want to talk to it.
Maybe somebody has clarified, but it's still very confusing because it's the 14th today. The issue is what has been done with either DPI, with the relating to complaints, and again with the sector, because the sector can't go to DPI, it must come to you. The indications are on GTPS. Whether there's consultation with the Minister of Telecommunication and Communication, it has nothing to do with the sector. Because the issue here is that the department needs to say, this is what we have done so far, this is the outcome. I mean, we sit on the 15th and see there's uncertainty. It's unfair. It's not right. On something that was due last year. And this is what I'm raising, that you find things that were supposed to have been made long time ago are still returning. Instead of making progress, we are stagnating on one issue. Because I believe whoever the unit is supposed to be now dealing with the EE still can't even put other targets because this one has not been met, for example, one city. But the implication, and for us to be able to say, if we were to grow the economy, if we were to develop and contribute to economic development in this country, there are areas, these are transformational issues that the country has to undertake. And if as a government of government that is supposed to drive transformation in this country, we are not making progress on things that we are supposed to be making, it's a problem. I think the GDP wants to respond, we need you to respond.
In a sense, Honorable Chairperson, the clarification is this. The amended broad-based black economic empowerment, which also amended the generic code of good practice, expects of sectors of the economy which have either adopted codes, to amend those codes to align with the new elements of the generic codes of good practice. So that alignment, Chairperson, that's the deadline you are talking to. In this respect, Chairperson, that role of aligning in the absence of a council, indeed, it becomes the default responsibility of the minister, according to TTI. But there's also a legislative loophole there. This is why the DG is emphasizing the idea that the department finds it more important to establish a council, which is the legislative body to oversee this, because the agreements on the review of the ICT sector code has been reached by the sector voluntarily in terms of the principles of the BBB. So the consultation with the Minister of Communications is with regard to broadcasting participating in the formulation of the council. The sector has to comply with what has been gazetted in this sector, and hence the consultation with DTI. The Minister of DTI is asking the Minister about the formulation or the establishment of the council, and that's what the Minister is taking through. At this point in time, until that is clarified by the Minister who has gazetted the ICT sector code, which governs this particular sector, the classification means that the gazetted code would apply.
Let me just ask a simple question as a director. Do we have a BEE ICT policy that was supposed to have been in 2003?
Yes, Chairperson, that policy is the ICT sector charter, which in terms of the generic codes, before they were advised, was adopted into a code which applies to this sector by a steering committee established by the minister at that time. And it had sector participation. Yes, Chairperson.
Then the issue, because I want us to be here, and maybe if my letter was responded to, I would have received the responses I look for. The issue that again comes through is that because the deadline was October, and you are saying to us, DG period, the sector voluntarily needs to comply. So it means you are saying to us, they don't need the council. So there's no need for this council to be there for the sector to comply. Am I correct? Is that what you are saying? Am I misunderstanding? I want to be clear what is it, because I'm confused where I'm sitting. Why is it? Because if they're expected to comply, remember, we interact with the sector. And one of the issues that I've set as this committee are going to prioritize is transformation. We've had a seminar on transformation in the sector. And I want to be clear, when I interact with the sector and I expect certain things, what is it that I must expect from them? And where I'm sitting, I'm still a bit confused on this one. Because if we are saying that we were supposed to do a council by November, we have not done. The deadline that is coming is not affected, I want to be clear, the deadline that is coming is not affected by the level of advisory council. Is that what you are saying? I want to be clear, colleagues. So meaning that the sector can proceed and comply without the advisory council. Is that what you are saying? Because I want to understand the impact of lack of the advisory council on the compliance deadline.
Your question is very technical for me at this point. Chairperson, there's annual reviews expected of the sector code. Then there's alignment in terms of the elements of the sector code which is required by GDI. There's an implementation of the amended broad-based black economic empowerment. The council is very important to the sector because it is the statutory facilitator for that particular transformation to happen, because it is going to have sector representation who comes from industry and all bodies relevant. So the existence of the council as a governance mechanism is also a critical element in the whole transformation agenda, Chairperson.
That's why I'm asking this, because I'm coming very simple and very down, so that I understand. You see, Minister, the issue here is that there's a deadline coming up. Today is the 14th. Where I'm sitting, I want to understand, do we expect that I must start looking at this sector to check compliance based on the law? Or should we say, no, 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 because of the delay by government, therefore we are not going to start this, because I need to know, if I decide on the 1st of May to say I'm going to do an audit of the sector complies to the BEE charter. That's what I'm asking for. Because our role is oversight, so I need to know, with this issue, what are we oversight, how are we overseeing this point?
I'm clear on what you're asking. Really, the work has not been put through there, so I don't think you can, it be fair to start asking them to comply if we have not concluded this process. I think what you should take is that we must have more of a grip in trying to push these consultations instead of sending data and do more follow-ups on these consultations which are happening with the other departments such as DTI. I think it also becomes important because, you see, there's been a regression. Even on the old ownership company was just checking with the companies and so on. I think the point they're raising is very important. Quite clearly, through engagement with some of the accredited players, they're keen on this thing. They're not going to do it until we put these measures in place for them to comply. And we have said to them, no, we're not pressing, we're not going to abandon this. The key thing is for us to finalize the answer. Matters is late, but I don't think it'd be wise to say now committee call them to account. But although the code just has to facilitate the targets in each area, but all the companies know that they must transform. But in terms of what is required in terms of the specific codes, I think until we have that to kind of finalize this process, I think that would be huge. My hearing is that must really stop pushing papers and push progress on this thing. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I think we are going to break. I want us to break. I see our refreshments have arrived before they get cold between us. So we break, and then we'll start when we open the meeting with just the resolution of the process. Do you want to break?
This is quickly one question that hasn't been answered, and I have listened to it. Is what is a KIN strategy?
Sorry? Which one?
Knowledge Information Management Strategy. It's an IT strategy.
Knowledge K,
Information I, Management M.
Okay. Thank you very much, members. We are going to break for 30 minutes, if that's okay, so that we are back by 2 o'clock and we start. Thank you very much.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.